Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. You know, studies show that Africa has the youngest and fastest growing population in the world. Experts project that by the end of this decade, the African labor force will be over 350 million strong. However, there is credible fear that as the youth population grows, the labor market is either shrinking in some places and in others, it is not sufficiently inclusive to make an impact on youth unemployment. And because of that, plus the ever-increasing cost of living in many cities and towns across the continent, many young African professionals have to juggle more than one job to make ends meet. On the show, we will have a chat with Michael Kaluba, a young Zambian professional, talking to us about his experience working two jobs in the Zambian city of Kitwe. Our conversation covers a range of issues. Michael talks to me about some of the challenges of working in the media space in Zambia, a country that has been described as one of the most peaceful on the continent. But first, before we get into our conversation, let's start with you, the listeners. What is on your mind? What do you want to talk about? African innovation, entrepreneurship, unemployment on the continent? Let's hear what you had to say.
Very many people are finding their way abroad than to work in Africa.
I come from Kenya, but I'm studying in Uganda at Makerere University. I think Africans as a continent and Uganda as a country, we lack innovation because, first of all, we don't have good mentors in our institutions to guide us on what we're supposed to do. And I guess that one comes in terms of, you know, the resources that are dedicated in doing a research and the implementation of the technologies. I guess African lacks funding, and most universities just depend on donors, like the Western University, where they are independent and they have substantial funds they spend on their research. So I guess that's why they have strong technology. Thank you very much for your opinions on this topic. In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. You can follow me at Upfront Africa. That's my Twitter handle. It's also my Instagram handle. Also join us on Facebook. Just key in Upfront Africa Show on Facebook and click like, share with your friend. And when you follow us, we follow you right back. And joining me in studio is Michael Kaluba, a young reporter from Zambia. Michael hosts a TV and radio show for media houses based in Kitwe. That's the third largest city in Zambia. Michael, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. So tell us about some of the work that you do. You host a TV show, right?
It's a TV show.
It's a morning TV show.
And it comes at 1 p.m. On Saturdays.
Yes, okay.
On the national broadcaster.
Okay, but then you also have a morning show on a radio station, which is like a private radio station.
Yes.
Like a commercial radio station.
Yes, where I work full-time. I do the breakfast show from 5 to 9.
So you juggle two jobs.
Yes, I do.
One morning job, which is a full-time job, where you have to wake up at 4 every day.
Thereabouts.
You'll be on air by 5.
Yes, I definitely
do like
have to
4
be.
Hours of straight radio.
Yep.
And then on the weekend, you also have a TV show.
TV show.
Man, that is a hustle. Is it, how difficult is that?
I believe if you love what you do, you definitely get to enjoy it.
If you love what you do, you don't work a single day.
Nope. Nope. It's all fun and games. And, you know, each time, you know, you're going to bed, you're actually looking forward to the following day and what you have to present to your listeners and, you know, to the people that are interested in what you have to give them.
As a person who's in the same business as you, I totally agree.
Yep. it's beautiful.
And so Y Zone is the TV show that you host on the national broadcaster.
Yes.
And what is the name of the national broadcaster?
The Zambia National Broadcasting Corporation. Short ZNBC.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you talk about on Why Zone?
Okay, so we have, you know, different types of topics that we talk about on Why Zone. But as the name suggests, it's a youth show. So mostly it's, you know, issues to do with, you know, the youth. And you can imagine for 10 years running into 11 now.
Right.
So obviously we've touched on everything, you know, social aspects, religious aspects, political aspects, which are very important.
And you have guests on the show?
Yes, we do.
We should mention that you're not in the capital city.
No, I'm not.
You're in Kitwe, which is, for our listeners who don't know, that's like the center or the heart of the Copper Belt.
Uh-huh.
Correct?
Yes.
What are some of the challenges for you as a young practitioner who is, you know, obviously juggling two jobs? What are some of the challenges on a professional level?
I think, you know, some of the challenges that come into play border on politics. Sometimes I think in Africa, political space is a very, very delicate space. And if you have to trade in those, you know, waters, you really have to be very careful.
Are there topics you cannot talk about?
Not necessarily, but I'll use a very funny statement which says, you know, you have freedom of speech, but, you know, freedom after your speech is not guaranteed.
Not guaranteed.
Yeah. So it's a, you know, a scenario of that sort.
Right.
Yeah.
But the irony is that freedom of speech is actually guaranteed in the Constitution of Zambia.
Absolutely.
As I would assume.
Absolutely. It's there and, you know, we're guaranteed.
But you tread a very careful line not to, like, piss off some people.
You just have to. You just have to.
How do you remain authentic and how do your people believe you, your audience believe you?
The best way is, you know, to keep personal opinions away from what you present on air.
Mm.
If you present facts, if there was a riot and 50 people got injured and 25 got arrested, that's not me making up my opinion.
Mm.
That is numbers. Yes.
Right.
This is
figures.
Something that is, you know, happening. But if I was to add an opinion there, you know, I would say things like, you know, government, you know, beat up youths because they were, you know, rioting and whatnot. The best way, really, is to keep your opinion away from, you know, what you're doing. Make sure you have well-researched information and you have sources that are giving you very accurate information. So that when you present it, even if somebody came and challenged you and said, excuse me, why did you say this? The best question you can ask them, is it wrong?
Right.
If it's wrong, I can work on it and make it right. But if it's not, then obviously not my fault.
How do you avoid opinions on a four-hour radio show in the morning? I would imagine there's a lot of opinion that you have to inject in, or commentary that you have to inject in the news to be able to fill the air for 4 hours.
You know, the media is a very fun and funny, you know, institution. So obviously the best way I do this is to just throw something out there to the people and let them judge for themselves. You know?
There's an interactive component to the show.
Absolutely.
Where you people call in, you know, WhatsApp, send you messages, and then you they respond. You ask them questions, and then they respond.
Absolutely. We run that side by side with our Facebook page, the RFM Facebook page, and of course,
give a shout out to your Facebook page so people can check it out.
Yeah. So search for YAR space 89.7 space FM. That is YAR. 89.7 FM.
We will connect that to our Facebook page so people can check it out if you're interested in connecting with Michael Kaluba from Zambia, Kitwe, Zambia, right now in the studio with us on Upfront on the Voice of America. So, Michael, you're here, the Voice of America. You've been here, what, for 2 weeks?
Two weeks
as an exchange reporter.
Yes.
Trying to learn the media landscape here in the USA. What are some of the things that you've learned in your visit here that you will apply when you go back to Kitwe?
Okay, I think one of the things is, you know, being versatile and being able to multitask. I think that's something that is going to work very well for the media in the future. I've seen, you know, a couple of personalities here, you know, do their own scripting and, you know, go in there and present their show. And it's something that is lacking in the media, you know, out there in Africa. And also the other thing that I've discovered is thinking outside the box. Making sure that, you know, when you are thinking about an idea, you're actually looking at, you know, projections of how is this going to impact, you know, the listener or is it the viewers? And also to make sure that, you know, it remains relevant. Sometimes we push ourselves to do the, you know, things by the book. And, well, it's quite predictable and makes it very difficult for you to convince the listener.
Zambia has been going through a lot of changes. On a political level, part of the changes that have worried observers out here or even inside Zambia has been a restriction on the media space, clamping down on media houses. I had an interview a couple of months ago with a gentleman who is an editor in Lusaka. There's a worry that the Zambian government, the current Zambian government, is not as friendly to the media as previous governments. Is that something that you have witnessed as a person who's in this space?
One thing I'll tell you for sure is the fact that media freedom in Zambia is very much, you know, alive. But, like I said earlier on, it's something that, you know, keeps reminding those of us that are practicing to make sure that you do not cross a certain line. And at the moment, the current government that we
have... But here's the thing, that's the irony, that if the contradiction is that when you say you cannot cross a certain line and then you're saying it's very much alive...
Do you understand sort of the contradiction?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, it's part of our constitution.
It can't be that alive if you have to keep checking yourself.
Okay, so like
I understand there's responsibilities as a reporter, but then who gets to define those responsibilities?
Let me explain a certain situation. Then we see, you know, how we can translate that into what, you know, your question means. The media institution that you're referring to is the Post newspaper. Now, the Post newspaper has been around since the 90s. It has seen governments come and go. And it was one of the most enterprising, most critical, you know, papers in the country. It became so, you know, viable as a business. It even went on to have a courier service and whatnot. Now, the person that was running the Post, a lot of people believed in the backgrounds he would, you know, influence who becomes president and whatnot.
Obviously, when you run a media organization of that power, of that nature, of that magnitude, then you also get to have certain powers, certain influence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So basically what happened was, you know, the Post became very critical of the current government. Literally every head, you know, headline every single day would find something that they would have dug up about government. And, you know, government just became quite uncomfortable with the Post newspaper. And subsequently what we saw was, you know, all these issues to do with, you know, them
taxes,
not having paying taxes and whatnot. But funny enough, right after they shut down the Post newspaper in liquidation, sold off all its stuff and, you know, whatnot, then they extended an amnesty to everybody else that was owing the revenue authority. So those of us that, you know, were objective about it were asking, but how come? Why didn't they do this before they shut down the Post? Now, when the Post, you know, was shut down, two new media institutions came out and they sprang from exactly the same people that ran the Post. They even tried to shut them down, the Mast and the News Diggers.
Okay.
Yes. So, you know, after that happened, you know, it's like the agenda of the Post continued under a different name. And so government tried by all means to, you
to
know,
come after
shut
them.
Down the Mast.
Yeah.
You know, they took them to court. They even sent people to go to the streets and rip Mast newspaper. I'm not saying government sent them, but there were people that went on the streets to rip, you know, the Mast newspapers and whatnot. But, you know, it stabilized and the Mast is growing strong.
But that's a fight against every media institution. Has to fight in whatever environment they operate. Even here in America, obviously, you know, in this current environment, you know that there's continuing friction between the government of Donald Trump and media houses like CNN that he feels are very critical to him, and that's where the term fake news came from. So this is, I guess, a struggle that we people who work in the industry have to deal with on a daily basis, and we have to understand and appreciate. That is, it's part of the job.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We are talking to Michael Kaluba. Michael is a young Zambian professional based in Kitwe. Kitwe is the third largest city in Zambia. Michael is talking to us about some of the changes taking place in his country, Africa's third largest economy. He also talks about some of the challenges in the media space, that classic fight between the state and the fourth estate. We also talk about China in Africa. China has a substantial interest in Zambia's natural resources, and Chinese state-controlled farms are flourishing in the country, which is a source of regular conversation among Zambians who are a little worried that the country might end up being a textbook case of the Chinese debt trap. Welcome back, Mike, and welcome back to you, listeners. Michael, so how are things in Zambia, politically speaking, despite what we just talked about in terms of the friction between the media and the government? Would you say that the country is doing well in terms of protecting the democratic ideals that have made it a beacon on the continent?
I think if we base that assumption on the fact that we're able to go for an election free and fair, well, it will have loopholes here and there. I mean, these things happen. But after that, we have a president and inaugurated, and there's no violence for that matter. Then yes, Zambia is okay democratically. But if we look at all the tenets that apply to a democratic dispensation, there are certain lacunas, there are certain loopholes that need to be checked. And these are issues to do with, the growing, unprecedented growing number of cadres that are being given too much power by the state. And also looking at how, the media is suppressed at certain times. Can you believe a few days ago, okay, I'm able to talk about this because, it's away from the courts. An opposition leader was sentenced to 3 months imprisonment. Okay, and for what? For what they call trespassing. Trespassing where? At the national broadcaster. This is a public place.
Right.
Okay, so he walks in to complain about his story, and they say, well, you're trespassing. And they slap him with 3 months imprisonment.
Mm. Those are not the kind of stories we used to hear coming out of Zambia. So there's obviously a certain level of animosity, of animus, between the government towards and the media, But let me just mention that you're the first person on this show in 10 years or 11 years to use the word lacuna. So let me just put it out there for people.
Well, one of my closest friends is a lawyer.
Now we have that out of the way. You mentioned something very interesting about Zambia. Zambia is one of the few countries on the continent, a continent that many know has had its own share of war and violence. Zambia is one of the few countries that has maintained a stability and a peace for many years. What should people learn, other countries learn from you guys?
The most important thing that has been able to propel Zambia to keep its peace is staying true to the norm that was given to the country by the founding fathers. Kenneth Kaunda came out in the open, and he made sure that every single Zambian understood that one Zambia, one nation was
one
the
people.
Basis.
Yes. I remember him chanting that
absolutely
many years ago. Yes,
from as far back as that Zambians, we believe one Zambia, one nation is our motto, and that's the basis for our existence. Actually, we have 73 tribes in Zambia. And, obviously that would have called for chaos. There are certain areas, that have very few ethnic, groupings, but they've been able to fight amongst themselves. But with 73 in Zambia, we've been able to keep the peace. And
does it have to do with the fact that you guys have been able to share resources equitably?
No, we haven't been able to share resources equitably. That's one thing I can tell you for sure. Because,
in many other places, that is a source of conflict in itself.
Yes, it actually came up where, for example, the people of Mongu, which is in the southern part of the country, where, the opposition United Party for National Development has a lot of people because they believe, the ethnic group from that side literally belongs to the group. They complained because there's literally no, you know, development that had been taken to those areas. You know, and for a certain period of time, there were a lot of areas away from what we call the line of rail that have actually lived away from everything that everybody else has had. It's now that we've been able to see, you know, banks and supermarkets and, you know, all these service stations being dotted in different parts of the country. You know, if you had gone, if you had come to Zambia at a certain particular point and gone to certain areas, you'd even discover that people were in classrooms that are thatched, you know, which is something that shouldn't be happening in this day and age. So there isn't an equal sharing of resources, but we've been able to see what the late President Michael Sata set out to do, which was a decentralization, you know, policy, where, you know, he created more districts, he created more places, he created more, you know, areas where government could now start operating from to give people what they need.
Now, somebody told me that Zambia had been spoiled by Kenneth Kaunda's policies in that people used to live a quite carefree lifestyle. You know, things were cheap. The price of copper on the world market was high, and the proceeds from those sales were kind of filtering down in people's pockets. Things are different right now. Do you see any economic pressures that come from that manifesting themselves on a political level?
Well, statistics show that more than 2/3 of Zambians are actually living in abject poverty. So that in itself really tells a big story about my country. To answer the question, I wasn't there in the Kaunda era, but I think
your parents were.
Yes,
and they're pretty happy.
Stories, you know, that come from that part of you know, our country's history, do acknowledge what you've mentioned, you know. But then people will always have an opinion. When Frederick Chiluba won his election in 1991 and came to power, he liberalized the economy, sold off the mines to private investors and whatnot. Today, we have a good number of people that actually believe that was a very bad move, you know. But if you look at the way things have been moving in our country, we did not have the capacity to run our own mines. That's how come we sold off, you know, one of Africa's biggest mines at $25 million. That is, well, very little money.
Yeah,
it was a giveaway. And the, you know, the people that bought that particular mine, that was under Levi Mwanawasa, you know. And the people that started running that mine made three times that amount in their first 3 months of operations.
No way.
Yeah. And you know, this is not a $25 million that we're saying they actually paid the full amount. It was
crazy.
An agreement to say when we start operations and then we start getting our profits, then we start paying towards that 25. Now, here are they making $75 million in their first few you know, months of operation.
Are you worried that this the selling off of our natural resources on the continent, that your generations, by the time you have kids and their grandkids, that by the time they grow up, that you won't have anything left to give them?
Absolutely. I think we've actually crossed that line already because land is a huge land you know, allocation, or is it land acquisition? The process of just, you know, having land in Zambia is a huge problem. It's a huge mess. Just last year in 2017, we had the Minister of Land suspending certain you know,
like
councils.
Councils. Land distribution councils.
Yes. They suspended their licenses, you know, of giving out land because there's so much fraud in the way land is allocated. There's so much that needs to be done to protect our resource. And the biggest issue that we have right now, okay, I don't know if this is going to sound right, but this is a very big issue in Zambia right now. We have a lot of Chinese people owning huge, colossal pieces of land. Yes. You know, and
Zambia is also one of the first African countries to have Chinese policemen.
Thank God we had that, you know, decision rescinded within hours, because really, no, man. It was funny. It was funny.
That was funny. Yes.
Yes.
I remember seeing it trending on Twitter
on social media about how Zambia is going to put together a Chinese force, a police force.
Well, actually, they did have we had the police inspector general appoint police commissioners from the Chinese community.
Mm.
So it was a decision already done, signed, sealed, and delivered. And then people reacted. Then it was rescinded. Mm. Yeah.
Is your generation worried about the influence China is having on your resources, the amount of land they're acquiring, controlling areas that have natural resources, and the level of influence they have on the local politics? Are you worried that that this might affect your generation in future, both on economic and a political level?
I don't know what really happens with our governments, but I remember the late president Michael Chilufya-Sata campaigned with low taxes and more money in your pockets. And one thing stood out from his campaigns. He said he was going to chuck Chinese investment out because it was very bad for
the
country.
There was a campaign issue.
Yes. Mm. When he became president, the first foreign mission he invited to the State House was Chinese.
I saw that coming.
Yeah, so we're wondering, okay, how has it backtracked?
How did these two...
Yeah, you told us you're going to make sure these people no longer get, access to our land, access to... If they are coming with, investment deals, they're supposed to come and build something and start from scratch.
Mm.
Not what we already have, and then they just occupy and then push in a few million dollars and then take. Yeah, you know? So really, the problem is there. Because you actually find, these Chinese shops and Chinese people, even in markets where, Zambians are supposed to operate.
Mm.
You know, we had a couple of videos and photos running on social media. They went quite viral of Chinese people selling chickens.
On the street. Oh, wow.
Now you wonder.
Now they're taking... Exactly.
These are supposed to be expatriates who come with, external knowledge.
Is that for real?
That's for real. That's for real. That is for real.
Oh, wow.
That is for real.
Sometimes you see these things on WhatsApp. Like, African WhatsApp is crazy with these different, people sharing, fake news.
Mm-hmm.
The real fake news is actually happening on African WhatsApp with people sharing stuff. So if I see a picture of a Chinese person selling chicken in Zambia, I would think twice about the validity of it. But you're saying that is real.
That is real. It's one of the complaints that a lot of young people and opposition political parties have had for quite a while now. I mean,
how much is Chinese influence in Zambia part of the daily conversation among your generation, among young people like yourself?
I think the...
is it worrying to the scale where people are actually talking about it every day?
Well, it
dominates airwaves, you cover it on your radio show.
Not to that extent.
Mm.
I think three quarters of the times that, we have these Chinese-Zambia relations, conversations, when we're just making fun of it, really.
So you're just mocking it.
Yeah, people say...
People don't take it that seriously.
They don't take it that seriously. But then, there are a few, non-government organizations and, people that actually understand to what extent this Chinese influence is going to adversely affect us. Because at the end of the day, if we give away a lot of land to the Chinese... And then what for the future generation?
Listen, if the Chinese are selling chicken on your streets.
That's exactly my point. But funny as it sounds, you see how we are reacting to it.
Right.
Now imagine.
Again, I guess this is the attitude with which people treat it. Is that
exactly. We just laugh about it.
We laugh about it.
We share a few pictures on WhatsApp.
It doesn't sound real.
It's laughable.
It doesn't look
real
if you did.
We were to ask, government today to say, explain to us the Chinese population in Zambia. Okay, give us a figure. And then when you do give us this figure, let us know in what capacity are these people in the country? Are they here as, immigrants? Are they here as investors? In what capacity? Because we can't have 6,000 investors. What are they investing in?
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. We want to thank Michael Kaluba. Michael Kaluba was our guest today on Upfront. We want to thank you too, all our listeners who tuned in Whether you are listening in on radio or online, we want to thank you for joining us today and sticking with us for the last half hour. And with that, we come to the end of our show today, but we'll catch you next week. Goodbye.